Welcome back to In Search of Tarot, a podcast that examines, questions, and reimagines our approach to life and the cards.
Through guest interviews and in-depth discussions, we'll explore and expand the beautiful complexities of spirituality, philosophy, magic, and more.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Angie.
And we're your hosts for this fascinating ride.
Thanks for being here with us.
Hi, everyone. Today's episode is a very special one, as it is the first in a series of episodes in which we are passing the mic over to guest hosts who will each welcome one of their favorite teachers, mentors, or friends for a recorded conversation. We'll be airing one of these guest episodes each month through June, and today's episode is guest hosted by Jonathan Coe, who first appeared on In Search of Tarot back in April of 2022. Jonathan is a queer mystic who currently lives in Brooklyn, New York, land of the Lenape people. Fluent in the language of music, astrology, tarot, energy work, statistics, and the Akashic perspective, Jonathan aims to empower the collective through compassionate discernment, to nurture communities of passionate seekers, and to expand our sense of interconnectedness beyond the myths of binary thinking and not enoughness. You can follow Jonathan's contemplations and conversations with friends, including myself and Jonathan's guest for today, Madison Neese, on their podcast, Healing the Spirit. Originally from Tulsa, Oklahoma, Madison Neese currently lives and practices on Kumeyaay land, also known as San Diego. Madison is a queer artist, human guide, and facilitator who believes in a non-expert model that empowers the individual and collective to tap into their own wisdom rather than as a facilitator having the answers. This is radical aliveness. When Madison began their own journey, they did not understand that the pull to somatics was a call of their ancestors. They were being pulled to embody all the gifts their mother could not and ultimately lost her life suppressing. Madison was being pulled to feel the things their grandmother had no language for. Madison's body knew the language, however, and it spoke in illness, pains, aches, and rage. During this process, Madison discovered gifts hidden beneath these repressed emotions. These gifts were the sensations, intuition, and creativity of their lineage. When Madison stopped trying to push these parts away, they wondered what would happen if they let them grow. They grew into Madison's practice today. The conversation that you're about to hear between Jonathan and Madison is incredibly magical, poignant, and vulnerable. It actually led me to tears more than once as I was listening to it during the editing process. Our goal with these guest episodes is to expand the reach of In Search of Tarot and provide you with an even broader range of topics and perspectives. This podcast relies solely on the financial support of our incredible Patreon community, through which we are very proud to offer payment to all of our guests and now our guest host as well. To be fully transparent, though, we would need to reach a goal of $200 a month on Patreon in order not to actively lose money on this podcast. As of today, we are currently at $120 a month, so we're only $80 short of our goal. If you enjoy this podcast and have some extra money to spare, please consider joining us on patreon.com/insearchoftarot for as little as $2 a month, where you'll be able to enjoy weekly long-form essays, discounts to classes and workshops, and invitations to attend our monthly virtual tarot hangs. Anyone who joins at the $5 or $10 a month level and sustains that giving for at least 6 months will also receive a special piece of In Search of Tarot merchandise that we're creating this year in the mail. The link to join us is in the show notes. All right, now enjoy this special conversation with Madison Neese, guest hosted by Jonathan Coe.
Hello, Madison. Thank you for being here. I'm so excited for this conversation.
Hi, Jonathan. I'm really glad that you invited me to have this conversation. I'll say something about it, though, is striking a chord. Like there feels like there's this risky point in me of sharing about this that I find interesting.
Yeah, same. So I would love to begin with actually situating the listeners to us, like us as human beings, us as spirits, us as like geographically, spiritually. I want to ask you about the lenses and the perspectives that you're kind of bringing into this conversation, into this exploration of the body and the practice of divination.
Yeah. Ooh, I'm feeling so much risk here in my body as we say it. And that for me manifests as kind of this sensation in my chest. It's like, it, saying who I am while sharing my thoughts. And what I will say is currently I live on unceded Kumeyaay territory, which is San Diego, California. And I grew up in Oklahoma, and I was raised by a mother who was a witch, and she struggled because of it. She grew up in Southern Baptist church, where the body is this interesting place. It's God-given, but simultaneously, certain parts of the body are labeled as sinful or unpure. I also come from a Japanese cosmology. My father's Japanese, which they have their own beliefs about body and impurity and the way things should be. I'm also queer, you know, somatic practitioner. But most of all, I'm a human and an artist. Mm. And sometimes I struggle to be in my body. And that's the truth. I'm curious. What about you?
Yeah, I think we share the church part of it. I also grew up with a family that, you know, was going to church. And a word came into my mind when I was thinking about this question, which is churchiness as godliness. Because it feels really important for me. And I'm laughing because I can feel my body like needing to lighten it up because there's such a heaviness to it, you know? It feels important for me to name at the beginning of this conversation that I'm really separating church culture from the heart of Christ and even like that whole lineage. I also grew up in Indonesia to people who have either immigrated to Indonesia from China or have settled there for some time and is mostly of Chinese lineage. So I do have a very interesting relationship to animism. Like, I find myself really hating that word because I grew up around people who like embody this. Like, this is not a philosophy, you know, this is not like a class that you take in college, right? Like, to me, growing up around people who are, you know, animist, it's just how we view life, you know. And also something I want to name is that feels important is, you know, growing up in a culture like the Indonesian culture, toxic collectivism is very much alive. So that makes things a lot more complicated because in some sense, I don't really see this black and white between individualism being this terrible thing and collectivism being this amazing thing. I think I really live kind of in the cracks in the middle. And ancestrally, also, I have a lot of questions about my ancestral practices, and I'm coming here with more musings and wonderings and holes than answers. So
Yeah, and as someone who grew up in collectivism nestled in an individualist culture, you know, the U.S., I really understand that viewpoint of body. And when I think of body, I tend to, because I'm coming from a certain lens, an American lens, that a body is a singular thing. But actually, a body can be a body of text, right? A body of bodies, like a community body. And sometimes, you know, and this is just speaking to the way that my family orient, sometimes the greater body is almost more important than the singular body. And in some ways, I think when we are doing whatever form of divination, whether it's runes, tarot, throwing of bones, scrying, astrology, there is some element of connecting the individual body with a greater body.
Yes, I love that. I wrote down that for me, body is really about... the first word that came to me was actually collection, which was really interesting. And I think this is you know, as I'm feeling into my own definition of a body, I'm kind of thinking about the body in contrast to the parts, you know, that there's something about a body that to me implies synergy, implies collaboration, right? And also implies multiplicity. Like there are many different facets to what we consider a body that may not be necessarily reflected in the parts. And also a body is greater than the sum of its parts, right? I think for the most part. So as I was hearing you speak about it, I'm also feeling that there's this idea of harmony and cacophony that is always kind of surfacing, you know, whenever I think about a body.
And it makes, you know, I did a little preparation. I love to look at the etymology of words and, you know, just words are so important and simultaneously limiting. And I love body. I tend to think of it as a noun, but there's also the body as a verb, right? An action, which a body in verb form literally translates or means to give material form to something abstract.
What's coming up there for me is bringing in this idea of divination, actually, because as I was sitting and thinking about this idea of divination, what's coming up is that I think especially in the West, we really like to divide, you know, between like the divine and the mundane, right? The sacred and the non-sacred. And I think there's definitely value to that. But it's interesting to be considering our existence, right? As humans who have an experience of a body, but also have an experience of spirit. As, you know, that perhaps our spirit chose to be in a body because there's something that it couldn't otherwise do, you know, like there's something that it's maybe trying to fulfill an agenda that couldn't be fulfilled in etheric form. I feel like when people separate the mind and the body, what has been your experience around that? Do you find, I mean, first of all, I think, you know, from a scientific perspective, we probably know that it's not separate, right? Like, you know, we like to think that the mind is here, you know, but then the gut is also a sort of brain, right? The heart is also a sort of brain. Like, there's more, the heart, the electromagnetic field of the heart is much larger than the brain, actually. So that's really interesting, you know, in terms of thinking about, like, the control center. And then you can also argue that the other way around is true as well, right? That a lot of our emotions are byproducts of chemicals that are actually happening in the brain. So I'm really not an expert around this, but this is, you know, an area that I'm kind of curious about. And I'm,
it's true.
I'd love to hear your thoughts about it. And maybe even like, what have you found in your practice, both personally and with other people around the separation of the mind and the body, and what have you learned about it?
It feels so intrinsically linked to something that you said earlier about, you know, where you grew up in Jakarta and the people that raised you and that you're born of, and how, you know, I see it all the time on social media, and it's like, I'm an animist this, I'm an animist that, and also creating this distinction between just a human animal, right? Human animal, Homo sapien, and the planet. Like they're really, the separation really has been created out of modernity. And so, in my personal experience, the separation between mind and body has caused my mind to get so strong, which is great, right? I have a strong mind. But also, I feel that it hinders me in some ways. And I see this a lot in people that I work with, too. There's so much thinking and organization and theory and all of this where it's almost hard to live because I'm always labeling something. And that's where I feel like the distinction between mind and body becomes so limiting.
Yeah. And sometimes too, you know, when we're talking about the separation between the mind and the body, what's coming up for me is that people also create this binary, right, between being embodied and being disembodied. And something that's come up in my collaboration with my, you know, astrology teacher, Britton, is we were talking about, you know, it's actually impossible to be disembodied, right? Like, you can be ungrounded. For sure. You can be an anxious wreck, but can you really be disembodied as long as you're still in a body? That's not really possible, you know, and unless you are a spirit and you are not tethered to a body. And I don't know, what are your thoughts about that? Or does anything come up for you?
Yeah, you know, I've worked with a lot of different populations in my career. There was one particular trauma center for people who identified as female, and I witnessed and I worked with a lot of DID clients, so dissociative identity disorder, where literally the psyche fractures from trauma and new personas and personalities are created, which really is just, you know, just to throw a whole wrench in this conversation where they, you know, it's a very real and sometimes valuable adaptation to something that otherwise would have been really fracturing to this person. And it still was fracturing to them. But the reason that I say this, Jonathan, is sometimes what gets labeled as something that's not desirable, I think a lot about how we're socialized to what we and what we deem desirable and undesirable. So even in healing, even in means of the body, where are these messages coming from that to be embodied in your body all the time is more desirable than whatever else?
Yeah.
You know, right. What right. Sometimes it all serves a purpose in its own way.
Wow. I feel like sharing that, you know, I've been in sessions, you know, I guess you can call them divination sessions, whether that's using the birth chart or accessing the Akashic records. And it's interesting because what's come up over and over again is that the shame in not being in that ideal state, right? The shame of not being embodied, the shame of not, you know, being relaxed enough, or the shame of not prioritizing ease over working is actually heavier than the experience of not being grounded, you know, or not of overworking sometimes. That the shame that we carry around how we need to be is so much more damaging than the state itself, you know, the quote-unquote undesirable state itself.
I really resonate with that as someone who started my healing, whatever, journey really young in my life. There are some ways where putting such a focus on healing brought me farther away from my aliveness. So I'm thinking about divination here. And I'm curious, because we really have gone into this concept of body. And I'm just curious, because I know you work a lot with astrology, which to me, I don't know if it, but that's a form of divination.
Yeah.
What does divination mean to you?
I'm going to answer this by way of my relationship with divination first, and then maybe we'll kind of see where that takes us. But I really see that divination is happening everywhere and all the time. And I think divination is one of those states and activities that we kind of, you know, go in and out of. And maybe in a nutshell, how I want to answer that question is really from my heart space, which is that I feel like all of us carry a piece of the divine within us. At least that's my belief in my cosmology. And that the act of divination is about reconnecting or remembering or re-listening to the whispers of that divine within. Actually, a really probably weird story, which is my conversion story. So when I was seven, which is interesting because now I know that at age 7, we have our first Saturn square. So there's something there, I'm sure. I was taken by my parents to this kind of, you know, Christmas puppet sort of situation. And it was a conversion story. It was kind of a Jesus story in puppet form, you know. And that was my first experience of what I later in my life contextualize as connecting to the heart of Christ and connecting to the Akashic field or the Akashic records or the womb of the goddess or whatever the fuck you want to call it, right? Like, the words don't matter, because it's really that experience of becoming one with the divine. It's the experience of borrowing the sunglasses of the divine, right? And I think to me, divination also has... So the reason why I'm sharing that story is because I feel like a lot of my pursuits in life, like, for example, writing music, being on stage, even, you know, pursuits of various kinds of relationships, you know, including a relationship that I have with my vocation now, I think is a constant attempt to recreate that experience, right? Recreate this experience of being in that space of divinity. So to me, divination is maybe less about fortune telling and more about accessing the different timelines that become available to us when we see the world and the universe from that perspective of the divine.
Definitely. I love how divination seeks to organize what appears to be very random or disjointed, like this kind of random information, things that we can normally overlook. And actually, those are the components to me that divination seeks to organize to provide insight into a certain issue. And there's a hallmark for me of divination. I don't do divination in my practice. I only do it for myself. But there's this kind of willingness to collaborate as a modern body raised by the internet. I tend to fancy myself as a closed field of emotions. Yeah. And when I sit down with my card or my rune in the morning, I'm already opening up to this collaborative experience. What information would assist me in what I'm doing today? Mm-hmm. It helps me see the unseeable, connect to the unspeakable, you know, those types of things.
Wow. I really love that. This is kind of bringing to mind a conversation that I had on my podcast with a friend of mine, Zanetta Sykes, who is also a tarot reader. And what they said was something that's been growing in their practice is becoming aware of that moment when you feel that whatever you've been doing, however you've been thinking about this particular problem or this particular area in your life is no longer working. And then you crack yourself open, right? Using a question, right? And so I think as I'm feeling into what you were sharing there, there's something about divination as being a portal to enter reality through this experience of like the internal and the external, right? The individual and the larger web, the question and the answer. And it may seem like a binary, but I think that in the marriage of the two, right, you start to see a new thing emerge. You know, the third thing really come from this collaboration between the two polar opposites.
Wow. And I love what you're saying. And I keep kind of looping things back to previous statements that you've made, where I remember you sharing something about how these types of, I'm botching what you said, but these types of gifts are not available just to a select few. Mm-hmm. You know, an artist is not just the person that can go get a master's, you know, in art and teach it. Mm-hmm. It, and I think divination or, you know, certain like more psychic, I always have an aversion to that word. For some reason, but these kind of gifts, I don't believe are just available to the lucky few who are blessed with it. That's what I used to think. And I was like, oh, I want to be able to access that information.
Yeah.
To me, I believe that we all can. It takes some practice, some patience. And for me, when I'm doing divination, I'm not actually like seeing something or having a premonition in this way. Sometimes it's a simple knowing and tuning into all of my senses of my animal body that knows itself is connected to a wider web of existence and also to this planet, and sensing, seeing, hearing, knowing, feeling, tasting, smelling all of this different data and being able to filter it through my system to be of use to me or of use to someone else. And it makes me think, I did some research about different, you know, divination practices, and a lot of ancient divination practices would be looking at omens from the natural world to tell good or bad fortune in the human world, right? Like they weren't always, sometimes it's looking at a body of water or throwing bones, something like that, or using hallucinogenic plants even. And I go to say this, that divination is so connected to the greater body of our body, which is this planet.
Wow, that is so delicious. I want to take us back a little bit into what you were saying about practitionership, because I think this is important. Something I have been learning, you know, and I think I can really say that I have been really lucky to have teachers who taught me this in you know, one way or another. But I really see the role of the practitioner as opening up that field, right? The practitioner is someone who is devoted to building a practice with this field, right? I don't really know how to describe it, but I think we all know how it feels to be in that presence, right? And this is even something I'm experiencing when I came into your group container, you know, Catabasis, or even in our one-on-one work together, where I come and, you know, it's interesting, Madison. I'm going to use you as an example. Actually, maybe that's a little awkward, but I think it's cute.
Be awkward, yes.
But one of the principles that you taught us, that you learned from Radical Aliveness, is cultivating a non-shaming heart, right? Or non-shaming attitude. And it's fascinating that even something that seems conceptually so simple, right, translates into something really rich and nuanced on a field level. Right. And we can feel together, like I and the other participants in your course, Catabasis, can really feel this. What does it mean to kind of embody that level of or that approach to the self, right? To that approach to whatever it is that we are working through, that are coming up in our lives, and maybe even with our own bodies, you know, or like this idea of like the willingness to be changed, right? Which is also another radical aliveness principle. To me, it's not just happening on an intellectual level when you're working with a practitioner. It's happening on a larger field level.
Some of the most potent divination sessions that I have had are generally when someone is holding a mirror up to me. You know, I'm already there. I'm already in the astrology, the cards, and now this person is using their senses, their tools, to reframe me back to me.
I love that. I also want to bring in something about divination because I'm kind of thinking astrologically here. Mm-hmm. Something that I think is interesting is in astrology, the third house is the house where the moon rejoices, and the third house often mm-hmm. speaks to local neighborhoods, to siblings, and then the ninth house is where the sun rejoices, and the ninth mm-hmm. house speaks to long-distance travel, higher education, philosophy, even astrology. And I think it's interesting that both of these houses traditionally are associated with divination, actually. And I do think it's kind of fascinating to be thinking, and I kind of want to share this with you too and see what comes up, this idea of that there is solar divination and there is lunar divination. And I think the way that we've been talking about with regards to illuminating, right, like opening to clarity around a certain situation, maybe mm-hmm. we can think mm-hmm. of as more of the solar aspect, but I think there's also mm-hmm. the lunar aspect, right? And I know before we started recording, we were talking about Hecate. So I don't know. Is there anything you want to say around this?
Have you ever just had a situation where whatever divination tool, be it, you know, I use the tarot deck, but I don't use the booklet associated with it. I use it in a very imaginal way. And I also use runes, which is part of my lineage, and I've studied them for a long time. And have you ever just had one of those situations where you did some divination and you just got called the fuck out? Like, it's just like, I just feel laid bare, right? Like, my ass is naked right now mm-hmm. and you just called me out. Mm-hmm. It makes me think about this time. I was in an abusive relationship and I didn't realize there was a very, very big age difference. And I was not sure whether I should leave or not. Mm-hmm. I knew inside, right? Mm. But I was scared to honor that voice because I had been told that I would be nothing without this person. Mm. And so I consulted the Rider-Waite tarot deck, and I just did the very traditional Celtic cross spread, and he was right there as the issue card, right? Or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I was very new to divination at this point. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it to me, especially in the lunar aspect, it's showing, sometimes the runes, the cards, whatever, will show me what Carl Jung would call kind of the unconscious, mm-hmm. right? Or mm-hmm. in core energetics, one of my somatic lineages, the lower self, mm-hmm. the aspect that seeks to separate mm-hmm. and cause harm mm-hmm. and destroy, which I believe, I wouldn't say every human because I don't know every human, but we all have some aspects of this, right? There's mm-hmm. a negative intent. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the cards will show that to me, the places where I'm just really fucking scared, or I'm really controlled, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. I don't know if that relates to what you were saying.
But I think so. I think so. I really feel like, you know, part of this lunar divination is certainly what you were bringing up around, you know, kind of opening up to the experience of the unconscious or the subconscious. And also, I mean, recently I had an I Ching reading, which is really interesting mm-hmm. because the I Ching speaks to us through proverbs, right? Like these mm-hmm. really convoluted, you know, I mean, I've been, I think I can say this because this is maybe part of my, you know, human ancestral lineage, but I feel like there's this way that, you know, ancient Chinese people speak in riddles, in that they're kind mm-hmm. of like saying, cross the river, be brave, but don't look back because then everything will be fucked up, right? Like this really weird roundabout way of kind of saying that there are always two sides of the same coin. And my experience of receiving that reading was really interesting because it almost like immediately went sideways. Like I had asked the question, I had a very clear idea and maybe even like in my body, this impulse of like wanting to go a certain direction. And then immediately what they told me was kind of like, stop in your tracks. Let us confuse you, right? Confusion as a tool for regaining clarity over the longer mm-hmm. term is, mm-hmm. I think, something that also comes up with this idea of divination, you know, because sometimes mm-hmm. we are moving at a pace that maybe is too fast and is driven by a destructive force, you know, that we mm-hmm. feel like we need to satisfy.
Mm.
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 I want to hear a little bit more about this idea of the body as a site of divination. What's coming up for you? And also, you know, this is really interesting, Madison, because I have an impulse, and we can totally mm-hmm. back away if you don't feel like this is the mm-hmm. right question. But as I spoke those words, I'm curious mm-hmm. what memories are coming up for you, what sensations mm-hmm. are coming up for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm. You know, actually, when you shared that, something kind of disorienting happened to me in that moment. Mm-hmm. And I think you felt it. Like, I was like, oh. And it's interesting because you were, A, talking about confusion mm-hmm. as kind of this reorienting force, mm-hmm. which, you know, divination, right, is kind of looking beyond the surface level.
Mm.
And that's kind of what I hear you doing with that, is like, oh, the confusion is actually generative. It's actually an alchemical process where I could re-enter the soup and find different form.
Mm.
But I was actually thinking about social media.
Mm.
When you were talking about slowing down and tuning in and unconscious forces and things like that, like it just swept through me where I felt the disorienting feeling that I often feel lately when I get on social media.
Mm.
I'm having this experience where my mind says, you need to be on here and you need to post and, you know, show people your wisdom. And my body is like, no.
Uh-huh.
The most potent magic sometimes is that which is never spoken or never showed.
Mm.
And so sometimes there's different divining voices inside of me.
Mm.
And I'm curious if you ever feel that as well.
Very much so. I mean, when I was first feeling into this concept of the body as a site of divination, what was coming up for me was actually some of my first experiences of really mm-hmm. noticing that I'm in a body. And they often have to do with either inflammation. Like, I remember when I was maybe around 6 or 7, discovering that I had a shellfish allergy, and just kind of my mm-hmm. whole body, like, you know, kind of
mm-hmm.
Exploding. And also unexpected discharge of fluids, you know, mm-hmm. like, and I'm talking about, like, I grew up with also some respiratory allergic reactions. And so I would, when I was a kid, I used to get, people used to make fun of me because I would suddenly just mm-hmm. really have a lot of mucus, you know, kind of coming from mm-hmm. my nose, you know, and also
mm-hmm.
thinking even about, like, my very first sexual experience. Like, there mm-hmm. is that cognitive dissonance of, like, wow, the body is... And you know, I would say that even thinking about my respiratory allergies, right? Like, the body is relieved when it discharges mm-hmm. the fluid. And mm-hmm. then there's also, like, the sense of conditioned shame that can come in
mm-hmm.
and, like, a desire to, or an impulse to stop ourselves from mm-hmm. fully discharging. And I don't know why that's coming up, but something about release, I think, is also related to the body because,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is part of life, right? We inhale and we exhale. We take in and we, you know, spew out, right? And I think there can be a lot of, I think there's something in this idea of the body as a site of divination that is also speaking to how, despite the conditioning that we received, the body reacts in a way that totally is in congruence with nature.
Mm-hmm. Mm. What I'm hearing you say, at least from my lens, mm. is that sometimes our socialization and how we're socialized is at odds with this concept of body as divination, right? Your body's telling you I'm allergic, and the socialization. Yeah. And it also sparked a memory for me. So I started a program called Radical Aliveness, which is world work. There's people that come from all over the world to do this. And we had no home for the school because they were trying to keep the prices minimal because people are coming. And it's quite expensive. And we were in the Ontario Convention Center simultaneously with a gun convention.
Whoa.
Which was really an intense experience. And the reason that I share this is I was going to my first ever workshop of this, right? And I got heinously ill. I started throwing up, I had diarrhea, like the whole nine, everything was coming out of me. Because my body knew things were about to move and it was going, like, it knew it was going to happen. And a lot of people have this before, like plant medicine ceremonies, like the body's like, oh, I know this is about to happen. Like, let's clear. Right. So there's some, like, you know, I don't know the technical of why, but sometimes the, you know, literally the body is a divination tool where it can foresee what is about to happen.
And this is something I'm curious to hear your thoughts about too, Madison. Something I'm currently really thinking about is, you know, when we use an external divinatory tool, right? Like the runes or the I Ching or the tarot, astrology, there's also a process where the body needs to react, right? In order to come up with information, the body needs to react. And I'm almost, you know, this is something I'm exploring with some of my students in my container at the moment, which is, what if you let your body react? And what if you get really curious about what that's all about and get really skilled at communicating what you're actually experiencing, rather than feeling like you have to tell someone something profound? Because I think you and I have been talking about this idea of like showing up as like the wise person, as the sage on public platforms like Instagram. And I think sometimes maybe where our bodies are starting to eject this too is that there's a part of us that is saying, hey, there are all these other parts that may not be quotable, but is really wise nonetheless, right? Like witness our wisdom. So I don't know. I don't know if there's a question there, but what comes up for you as I was sharing that?
As I hear you say that, I feel like maybe we could take a second to just go into this. And if the listener wants to do it with us, let's just see. So I tend to focus a lot on language, right? And when I think of divination, I'm thinking of someone telling me something with language. And so maybe we could try something different here. And I'm just thinking, like, what if we just felt our feet together? And we're just noticing, we're not even changing anything. Notice your breath. There's going to be an impulse to shift what you're experiencing, but I really want to urge us just to notice. There's no desired goal. And sometimes I like to kind of lean into my back. That will help me feel not the front of my body, but the actual body of my body, right? My torso, my throat. Let's just notice if there's any sensation here, any areas that feel tight. And maybe there's one particular area of your body in this moment that draws your attention. And I do want to say, especially to the listener listening to this, your mind might be drawn to that which is uncomfortable. That might be a habit. And maybe you want to go there. But also you can play with, maybe there's an unknown place that feels riskier that also is calling my attention, and maybe I want to go there. I'm curious what you notice, Jonathan.
I actually noticed the inside of my thigh, but not like all the way deep, like really the parts that are close to my knees. So like kind of the inside of my knees, which was a very interesting experience because that's a very neutral place for me. I don't really feel a lot of sensations there, but I'm finding myself drawn to that point. And then immediately afterwards, I was finding myself kind of, there's some energy moving around my face in kind of a swirly pattern.
And I'm curious if you were to just have these sensations or awarenesses be a divinatory tool for you in this moment. What are they trying to speak to you, get you to know?
I mentioned to you at the beginning that I came to this session a little rattled. And I think what I'm noticing as I'm starting to pay attention to these, to whatever is coming up in my body, is that I'm really no longer in that state. I think our conversation has created a little portal for us. And, you know, when you were first starting to talk about the feet, I also had this image of us kind of like in a spa. You know, those, one of those Asian spas where like they had like little fish kind of like gnawing at your feet in like a... I had an image of us kind of being in one of those environments, and I was like, this is so fascinating. And that was just kind of something that clairvoyantly came into my field.
Yes. And when I hear you say that, and I'm just kind of like being with you and in this act of divination with you, I experience my divination as not seeing physically, but almost like I imagined a tree. I just imagined this big tree, and then I almost felt like from your legs that there was this kind of urging for playfulness. And then we kind of went there with the fish. There was like a little giggle. Like these conversations could be in divination. It's like sometimes I only do divination when I really need something, you know? And it can be approached with this sense of curiosity, play, imagination.
Totally.
The way that our brain works is really cool. You know, we're never really fully interacting with the current moment, like ever, right? Because this is not the way that our brain works. Totally. You know, it's like, I'm looking at Jonathan, but I'm also thinking of seven different associations with like what could happen with Jonathan, right? And so because of that, like I actually felt myself kind of drop back into like being 13 and, you know, like having some gum in my mouth and being a snotty, like kind of high schooler, you know, where playfulness does live. So she's here right now.
Wow.
And I think that makes me think of how divination connects us to other parts of ourselves, that maybe when we're taking care of the family or having a job or all of these things that we have to do to survive can connect us to other aspects of ourselves. A lot of, in my world, a lot of people talk about inner child. I also talk a lot about the inner teen, the inner early 20s, which is generally a pretty wild time for a lot of people. And helping us connect to all aspects of who we are and what we come into this life with.
It is very interesting as you were speaking about this. It's kind of bringing me back to how, I mean, at this point, this is so cliche, but it's like the body keeps the score, you know. And this past weekend, I was really experiencing that because I was going back to some of the places that I used to hang out in. I've been living in New York now for... This is my 16th year in New York, so it's a very long time to be living in a place like New York and to basically not have moved at all, you know, ever since I moved here. Something that was coming up for me was how you know, when I returned to some of the places I used to frequent with certain friends during certain, you know, past chapters of my life, it all kind of comes flooding back in, you know, like that part of me, that version of me and their desires, their hopes, their dreams came rushing back, you know, and I think there's something very powerful there too. Like, I'm almost thinking that there's something kind of oracular about that process, you know, that it's really trying to tell us something about desire. And I've been contemplating on desire a lot recently because I really feel like desire is the heart of incarnation. And so if desire is the heart of incarnation and the body is a site of divination, then like, what does that empty belly of yours trying to tell you when it's craving a certain kind of noodle that you used to have when you were five, you know?
That is very relatable to me. How do you, just speaking as body of divination, as a site of divination, how do you know desire in your body? Like, how do you know that that's the experience that you're having? Because I hear so many people say, connect with your body, like sense your emotions. But how do you know that it's that voice and not something else?
This is a dark answer. But I know because I know because I think when I'm really close to an emergent desire, shame comes up for me. So I know shame as the psychopomp for the arrival of desire.
Wow.
I told you it's a dark answer.
No, it is so not dark. It is alive. It is true. And I'm sure it's relatable. You know, my desires actually usually come to me with the voice of anxiety or worry. Growing up, raised in a matriarchal Japanese family, love was expressed through worry. And so oftentimes when something matters to me, like for instance this conversation, it matters to me, right? I'll just worry about it. I'm just worrying. I'm worrying. But really, there's a desire to connect. There's a desire to share. There's a desire to be understood and heard, you know, here. And so to me, sometimes, and the way that I orient is, yes, my emotions are what they are, but can I also take a moment to see, is, you know, right? If we were just to look at the shame, it would be like, oh, I'm bad, and stop there. But there's ways where I have learned to notice that all experiences, all emotions are impermanent, right? They're not going to last forever. Can I breathe into this shame? Can I breathe into this worry? Giving it a face, a voice, an image. Maybe there's someone else's voice that comes into my head. Okay. And now just breathe into my body and say, what have you come here to tell me? What do you want me to know?
Can I explore something I'm curious about?
Let's do it.
Okay. So I know you've journeyed quite a bit into somatic exploration. And I'm curious, what has that journey looked like for you? What has changed and shifted, or what has not changed and shifted in your relationship to your body?
This is gonna be a wild ride.
And like, you know, I'm mindful we don't have 4 days here, but
yes.
But yeah, what's alive for you when I ask that question in this moment?
And it makes me want to ask you a different question, but I'll put a pin in that. Which is, so first of all, I want everyone to know I'm Aries Sun, Sag Moon. I come into this life with heat. And basically, I found somatics at 24, and I wanted to kill everyone. I had hate, like just hate in me, you know, and I'm 5'4", like, you know, whatever. And I hated. And my first ever RA workshop, I screamed for the first time ever. Like a bloody scream of my childhood. And my teacher, Ann Bradney, she got on one knee, Jonathan. And I'm screaming. You don't scream in my house. And she got down and she looked at me and she goes, "You are so fierce." And something happened to me that day where I was like, oh, I have this energy and I need this or I will die.
Yeah.
And so I came to somatics with urgency. I was struggling, you know, I was a couple years sober from heroin addiction and all sorts of things. And so my journey started out super volatile and I just raged at everybody. And I raged for years because I was fucking mad. And I was mad about what was happening in the world. And I was mad and I was mad and I was mad. And I got stuck there. I got really stuck. It's so alluring to put armor up and say, now I have this education in somatics and you all are peasants. And I got myself up on this high horse. And of course, a holy Saturn return happened and the house came crumbling down. And, you know, to me today, my somatic practice looks a lot different. I make soup sometimes now. I really do a lot of movement practices where I'm just connecting internally and saying, how do I want to move? How strangely do I want to move? How little do I want to move? And my somatic practice looks a lot more like living today than it used to. And to be honest, sometimes I don't want to be in a body still. And I'll let myself have those days because it's not that linear. You know,
it's interesting because I think in some ways I can now see that divination is that song that I've been singing my whole life, essentially. And also at the same time, I think divination saves my life in a way.
When I enter into a divinatory practice, I'm kind of entering into, and I do this a lot in my work with other people, entering into a sort of trance state or open state where I'm collecting or cultivating energy that's not normally accessible to me when I'm just, you know, texting on my phone or something like that, right? I'm expanding my container in this way where I would venture to say, for most people, we're already in that state when we're dreaming. Like there's already this way where we are in this expanded state where our dreams are full of possibility. And so our dreams can also be a really interesting space to start with divination. It's part of our body. Our mind is our body. And I really love recording my dreams, even if just in my phone, and kind of, I have this way where I'll be like, did any themes from the day come into my dream? How, what do I want to make up about that? How do I want to organize this information to let it speak to me about an issue? So essentially what I'm saying is, to me, and a lot of my work and what I do in my personal life is bringing conscious awareness to the ways that we are divining information already. Like when I have a total aversion to something, like when my body literally says no.
Yeah.
And if you are listening and you don't know your body's language of no, let's do that. Start paying attention. Like, when does a body say no? When does it contract? When do you feel nauseous or like you can't breathe? Listening to that.
I love that. And I think for me, what's been really liberating about recording my dreams is also giving myself permission to not feel like it has to be like a whole saga, you know, like this doesn't have to be like a New York Times bestseller. This is just your dream journal, you know, relax. Like I give myself permission to sometimes just write you know, the five phrases that came to me. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, another teacher of mine also.
Yeah, I love what you're saying. And there's this way where, like, those moments between wake and sleep, mm-hmm. prior to sleep and after sleep, mm-hmm. are these really, like, fertile spaces mm-hmm. for divination. And mm-hmm. I love that your teacher has you draw mm-hmm. instead of write, because mm-hmm. writing is so, like, kind of cognitive and, you know, what would it be like just to draw the dream? And it makes me think of Salvador Dali, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. famous surrealist painter. He had certain practices where he'd fall asleep and then something would fall and alarm him when he fell asleep. Mm-hmm. And he'd actually make art right there, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. he in that space. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious what you feel the links are between art and divination.
Mm. Whoa. To me, at least I can only speak for myself and my artistic practice, but songwriting to me is always both a love letter to my past self and an oracle card for my future self. There's something about songs that I think, I mean, first of all, I really see as a songwriter that my songs are not mine. I'm just channeling or translating them. So mm-hmm. I think there is something about stepping into that divine field there and borrowing something, right? Or maybe not even borrowing, but like saying, hey, there is this really interesting frequency that I'm tapping into here. Do I have the permission to turn this into something that I can experience, that I can enjoy in my human form, right? Yeah. And I think art is so interesting because I think art is also one of those words, you know, where I'm really speaking from the very narrow perspective of art making, which is something mm-hmm. that I do, mm-hmm. you know, and something that mm-hmm. I identify with. But I think our whole life is art, just like how our whole life is divination in some ways, you know?
Yeah, art, creativity, divination, they feel so linked, like they feel like a similar current mm-hmm. to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm very similar where when I'm writing a song or something like that, especially music, it's almost like I'm catching it from somewhere. And mm-hmm. and when I'm doing a doodle in my journal, I love to apply the principles of alchemy into mm-hmm. my art making. It feels, mm-hmm. it brings that collaborative element that I love of divination into my art practice mm-hmm. more consciously. Yeah. So for instance, like I have this pen and I'm going to use this pen. And instead of me moving the pen, I'm with this pen. Mm-hmm. And as I kind of move it, we're moving it together. And there's this constant kind of communication that's happening mm-hmm. that people who are really great at divination, it feels like they're looking at the cards or the tools or whatever, and they're in deep relationship with them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that makes me think more about body as site of divination. Mm. And if someone were wanting to start this practice, what I would say to it, and I'm curious what you would say, is see it as a relationship.
Mm.
Of course, you are your body,
mm-hmm.
but also building and strengthening this relationship, because modernity and capitalism and all of these things encourage a separation between us and our bodies, a distinguishing factor. I need to fit my body into this gender norm or this piece of clothing rather than mm-hmm. I am my body. I am in relationship to it. Mm-hmm. How do I listen? How does the language of my body speak?
Mm-hmm.
And start there.
Mm-hmm. It's also really profound to think about how the same messages or the same symptoms that come up can mean so different or can have mm-hmm. such different meanings, because we all mm-hmm. have our own unique perspectives. This is something that you're always reminding me about, mm-hmm. which is, you know, we are a perspective, right? Each of us mm-hmm. are a point of view. And
yeah,
we're kind of like that prism, you know, through which divinity maybe can shine, but we are cut in a very particular way. And, you know, the what's coming up for Jonathan will be interpreted in a very different way than what's coming up for Madison.
Thank you for bringing that in, because there is no definitive way to do this. Mm-hmm. I was just thinking of kind of like, ooh, I want to start, or I want to deepen into this practice. And I was thinking last night, I was like, oh, wow, what a trip that there's no definitive reality. It's like different eyes see different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
May get a reading from two different people on a same issue and hear vastly different things, right?
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And what I will say to that question too about like starting this practice of the body as a site of divination is, I'm mindful of the fact that people listening to this podcast may be practitioners themselves. And I think something that I've been really, and I've kind of alluded to this earlier, but something I've been in a really disciplined practice around is to curb our compulsion to be profound or to manufacture profundity. Because I think, you know, when you think about this idea of, you know, I need to say something profound, which I think can come up, especially if you are charging for your service, right? Or if you are publicly sharing your vocation with the world, you know, there is a certain level of burden and gravity and heaviness, I think, that can come with it. And something I will say is, you know, I've been reminding myself that I come from a line of people, humans, non-humans, who have fought tooth and nail, who have lived to the edges of their pleasure to make my existence possible. Just me merely existing, being here, is the most profound thing I can offer anyone. You know, and I mean, this is in human design. Probably I also have a defined G center, so I have a little bit of a privilege. But I feel this in my body. Like, I really feel like it's not about what you say. Profundity is something that flows through you when the time is right and when the conditions are right, right? And it comes and it will go. You know, you can't hold on to it. Just like art, you can't hold on to, right? And I think relieving ourselves of the pressure of having to say something profound or be something profound or do something important or heal a long-standing pattern for someone is actually the first gift you can give yourself.
I have a teacher. Her name is Gogo Tule. And she once said, "Your life is a divinatory tool. Have you sat to listen to what it's speaking to you?" And of course, my answer was no. You know, I'm fast, like all over the place. And, you know, what you're saying leads me to kind of like get in tune with what my actual way, not the way that I want to present, but my actual way of divining in my life. Beyond cards or bones or anything, for me is fucking up. It's getting a little pain. It's making what we call a fucking mistake, right? Some of my biggest learning moments in my career and in my personal life have been because I did something that was super out of alignment with my values.
I feel like that's a good place to end. How are you feeling, Madison?
I don't know. Yes, I am feeling. I am feeling things. Like, I don't know.
Are there final words or reflections you want to share before we kind of close the space?
I think I just wanted to say, you know, to you, like, thank you for helping me ride my edges. To me, an edge is somewhere where there's risk. It's very different from a no, right? But it could feel like a no. But really, it's an edge. So thank you for helping me ride my edges today.
It was such a delight and a pleasure. I love being in conversation with you. There's always this kind of fireworksy thing that I think happened in the space between us. So, yeah.
Should we stop recording?
In Search of Tarot is independently written, recorded, edited, and transcribed by Nick Kepley and Angie Miller. You can follow Angie on Instagram at birdgirl_, that's BIRDGERHL_, and you can follow me, Nick, on Instagram at In Search of Tarot. Have a question or a comment? Email us at isotpod@gmail.com. We also invite you to leave us a rating and review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.